Hello and welcome to episode 210 of the official GunnaGeek.com show. This is a special episode that we've got. Stay tight, and you will see it in a moment.
Hi, I'm Stargate Pioneer from Better Podcasting, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Starting Tech News Weekly in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech News Weekly. I am Stephen John Drew, and with me, of course, is Suncast.
Hey, how's it going there, Andrew?
Suncast, how's your day going today, man? What's up?
Oh, God. It's going interesting, I guess. I'm a little confused.
Yeah, well, you know, we also have, of course, a special guest with us today. Of course, we do have the one and only Stargate Pioneer.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I don't think my mic flag matches anything. I'm sorry, guys. I'm not in the mood, I guess.
I gotta tell you, SB, it's long overdue to podcast with you. It's so awesome to have you here today. And guess what? We have returning again the one and only Chris Farrell.
Andrew, your hair changed. It's good to see, I guess. No man bun.
Oh, this is definitely a fun episode that we're doing today on the official GunnaGeek.com show. It is a crossover with the one and only Tech News Weekly. Now, Tech News Weekly has a lovely history that I'm going to let Suncast tell you all about, because it is his show. And Suncast, why don't you fill in those who might not be familiar, you know, the regular GunnaGeek.com show listeners, a little bit about Tech News Weekly.
So, Tech News Weekly is a podcast that I hosted along with Andrew Zarian on the GFQ network for a number of years, and recently we ended up taking a hiatus because he got a new job and he now has two kids. So his time is very limited, and you know how podcasting is. It's very time consuming, and so we put the show on hiatus, but it looks like we're doing another show. That's right, Tech News Weekly is back.
Well, honestly, we've been telling you for a while that you got to do Tech News Weekly. It's something that you've had it hidden for a while. We've been trying to encourage you for a while to bring it on out. So I'm just so glad that you chose today to let us help you get back in with the wonderful Tech News Weekly.
I am so glad we finally got you and SP on Tech News Weekly, because I've been asking you guys for well over a year now to do Tech News Weekly.
It's true. It helps that we're recording it at a reasonable hour this time, as opposed to when you used to record it, which was like the middle of a day. Like, and for me, it was like 10 a.m. my time.
Yeah, it was 2 p.m. my time. So I'd run home from work and be like, I got 30 minutes to get ready. Okay, let's go.
Well, this is a lot of fun, and it's actually very appropriate because there's been a lot of hot tech topics recently. So it's awesome that we get to talk about these today and just purge the backlog of tech news. Now, before we go ahead and get there, I just want to say that this episode has been sponsored by SP's Used Space Shuttle Emporium. That's right. If you're looking for a space shuttle, you want to check these guys out. I love them. Most of us, we can't afford to get ourselves a new space shuttle, so that's why SP has you covered. He's got one of the best previously owned, you know, aka used, space shuttle inventory systems around. I recently had the opportunity to purchase a space shuttle from SP, and I got to say, it was one of the most easy, the most fantastic things that I've ever dealt with. He checks out everything. He'll show you the flight logs. He'll show you all the information you need to know about your used space shuttle to have the confidence. Now, if that's not enough, he offers a no stress money back guarantee within the first 50,000 kilometers. So if you have problems within your space shuttle within the first 50,000 kilometers, just bring it on back. He'll help you out. He'll give you the money back or help you get into a newer model. So if you are looking for a used space shuttle, I encourage you to check out SP's Used Space Shuttle Emporium. Use the promo code TNW, Tech News Weekly, space. So TNW space for 10% off your first space shuttle order, available at snasa.space.
I'm going to be going there right after the show. I gotta get a new space shuttle and support Tech News Weekly.
Well, Uncle SP's got you covered.
Sweet. Thanks, Uncle SP.
You're welcome. We've got the space shuttles with or without engines. We've got them refurbished. We've got brand new ones. Well, slightly pre-owned anyway. And we've got the older models and some that weren't even designed to fly in space. So come on down and we will hook you up, Chris.
Now, SP, does this shuttle come with a bed from Casper.com on it?
That's extra.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's just get into our news stories here. And I think I'll just start us all off here. The rumors are cooking up about Google. That's right. Google is soon to going to be doing their big release with Pixel 2 and a bunch of other stuff. And apparently, there is a new Chromebook OS that's going to be announced at the upcoming event for Google. If you are looking for the Google Assistant on your Chromebook, you may be in luck, because that's the rumor. The rumor is that they are going to be bringing Google Assistant to Chrome OS. This is pretty exciting stuff. Yeah, you guys all seem super excited.
Who uses Chrome OS besides schools, basically, though? I mean, for me, that's cool, but I use Google Assistant on my watch and on my phone. I don't have any Chromebooks, so while it's a neat extension, meh.
Honestly, though, this is what Google should be doing, in my opinion. It's something that Google should be really looking at what systems they have, what platforms they have, and making sure to bring the assistant into it, because that's what Siri's done, right? Apple's done that with Siri. They've tried to bring it to different areas, and Google, it's far overdue to have it come up here. I gotta say, there's a lot of situations where I think students who are using Chromebooks would quite enjoy having Google Assistant on there. If they could just tell it to set a note or control their lights or whatever it is, you know, I think it would be fantastic.
So you used to be able to do stuff like that through Chrome, and I haven't tried it lately. Does Chrome still have the OK G word detection in it to let you do stuff?
I
didn't want to say it in case anyone's listening on their PC speakers.
I honestly have no idea. I've not tried it, so that maybe you should try it after the show.
I will try it and report in next week on Tech News Weekly.
I think Google is definitely on a line here, especially with the Home Assistant models, the Google Homes. They're going to go to screen models eventually, and eventually you're going to morph personal mobile computing with these home devices. And I think it's only logical that they want to inject their own OS in there to have their own apps in there, like YouTube.
And I got to say, in the chat today at Geeks.Live, we've got Emily saying, I use it, I love my Chromebook, and I use Google Home to do quick fact checks for my episodes. So clearly there is a user base, Chris. So why you gotta cut everybody down, man?
Sorry, I don't know any better. I use a Microsoft Surface for my needs in that regard.
Suncast, let me ask you this, Mr. Bub. What's your thoughts on this?
This is actually good news, I think, because something like this is the way we're going now is that this needs to be pervasive. And we're starting to see this with the Amazon product that's out there now. And the way they're going about this is they're putting it in anything and everything. And I think that is definitely the way to go. Getting this into more people's hands actually makes it more useful. So Google doing this makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it does make a lot of sense, and I'm happy to see them doing it. Now, while we're cruising down that voice assistant train, Chris, do you want to just take the rest of the episode to talk about your news?
I feel like we might need the rest of the episode to talk about my news here, guys. So Amazon held a surprise hardware event last week on September 27th. There were a lot of rumors that they were going to bring out a new Amazon Echo Assistant, because if you paid attention, the OG Echo went down to about $90 on sale at one point, and it's kind of old tech-wise, coming out in August 2014. So guys, here is your warning. If you are listening to this on your Amazon Voice Services device, do me a favor, go click the mute microphone button on there, because I'm going to try not to say the trigger word, but I might say it by accident because I've got to say it a lot in this news story. So I'm going to give you a couple seconds right now to go click that button as I struggle for time and go, okay. So surprise, surprise, Amazon announced a ton of new hardware. So let's start with some of the basics and work our way up. The first thing we got, Gen 2 Amazon Echo, something we were expecting to see, especially when you look and see the Google Home's kind of pretty looking. It's relatively small. You look at an OG Echo, it's a fairly tall device. It stands out. It's not exactly something you can easily tuck away. So they did release the new version 2 of the Echo. It will cost $99. It is half the size of the original and will also include multiple finishes. So you can get it in black fabric, gray fabric, a wood material, and I want to say it was a marble looking material, but I don't remember what the fourth option was. I really apologize for that. That will be $99 coming out in this month. I want to say it's like the 28th or 29th, but if you really want a bunch of them to put them throughout your house, you can get a three pack for $250. So guys, was it a smart move for them to refresh the OG Echo and replace it with the Gen 2 one?
Okay, I'll just start us off here. I'll say that, yes, that is something that this was overdue for the purpose of showing people that they're not abandoning the traditional platform. They've done all these expansions and everything, and I think that this was a smart move for them to show that they still care.
I think it was needed as well, because everybody that got these neat little Echo dots or Echoes, they were beginning to kind of stretch the capabilities that are inherent in these. I mean, they found the stuff that they needed to do, and that was it. If Amazon wanted to grow the capabilities or monetization or, you know, future device buy, because not everybody has one of these cute little puppies, that they needed to go to the next step. And this holiday buying season upcoming is the perfect time. In the meantime, I'm just going to assuage my Echo Dot and make sure it's okay with what's about to happen to it.
For the audio listener, by the way, SP is sitting there stroking his Amazon Echo Dot. It's really disturbing.
I'm petting it. I'm not stroking it. I'm petting it.
I don't know about that.
Yeah. We're not that kind of show, SP.
Okay, fair enough.
Are we?
That's just SP's just going to make a YouTube channel. He's not going to say a word. It's just going to be him sitting there just petting his dot.
or the dots by the fire during Christmas.
There you go. You should do it. Like I said, I'm glad that they're doing this, Chris. And I'm glad that that's the only thing that they have done.
Yeah, that's it. They've only done this, but before we move on to the other things they have done, bear in mind the Echo Show, which is their video capable one that just had YouTube removed from it, will remain, and the Echo Dots that you can buy for $50 will still continue to be part of the lineup. But there is a metric crap load of other things that were added to the lineup. So if you like the footprint and the size of the original Amazon Echo, well, I've got news for you. You can buy the Amazon Echo Plus. Why might you want to do this? Well, the Echo Plus is going to be the same size as the original, but it's also going to support Dolby Sound, and on top of that, have a built-in smart home hub, meaning you can set it in a room, you can tell it to find devices like light bulbs and various other smart home pieces that Steve and I have talked about a ton on the GunnaGeek.com show, and this can be the hub for you. Instead of having to buy a Wink Hub like Steven and I have, the Amazon device will be the hub itself. They showed it off at this event, connecting to Zigbee smart light bulbs and a few other products. And they made a point of saying no apps and skills are needed to set up those light bulbs. It just works out of the box. So it will start shipping soon. Will cost less than the original price of the original Echo, which was $189 3 years ago. It will be $149 in the US. They want to make a point of saying it will also be available in the UK and Germany. And each box will come with a Philips Hue smart bulb. So from the very beginning, you can start playing with light bulbs. That's the Amazon Echo Plus. It is the same size as what you had before, but I think it's an interesting play because Steven and I have talked about a lot. We use our Amazon, or at least I use my Amazon device, he uses Google device to control a lot of the things around the house. And instead of having to buy a hub, the Amazon device does it all for you. So is this a smart move, guys? Amazon baking in smart home hubs into their device. And if you were into smart home tech, would you pay the $149 for this version?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, look at it this way. A lot of times these first generation products are very compromised products. It's something just to kind of get it out the door. It's not going to be a perfect product right out of the gate. And this is the follow-up to that. It's just like, you know, when the original iPhone came out, there was a lot of compromises with that. But, you know, over the years, you've seen that it's become a very, very competitive product with a lot of features. And I think these Amazon products are doing the same thing, where they're also finding out what people want from devices like this. They're creating this market, and they're figuring out what that market wants, and they're quickly responding to that market with these newer devices.
Yeah, I will say that from my perspective, I've talked about it before briefly on the GonnaGeek.com show. I think that the idea that the Wink Hub could potentially go away is scary for me. All of my stuff is built around Wink. So the idea of more people baking in support for Z-Wave, I love it. I am super excited about it. And that's what I want, is more options, so that if Wink goes away tomorrow, it's just a bit of money and a mild inconvenience for me to get him back up and going.
And don't worry, guys. I got more in smart home stuff as we get through here. Don't worry.
What else you got?
So another device, because we can't keep it at just two, this new device is called the Echo Spot. It's a device with a small screen that is intended to kind of serve as a smart alarm clock. It has a 2.5-inch screen, and they kind of treat it as an evolution of the Echo Dot in the show, meaning it marries a screen with a small kind of device that can be placed anywhere around the house. Like the show, the Spot can be used to make video calls, has built-in sound, but also includes a line out so it can be connected to external speakers via cable or Bluetooth. And like all the other devices, supports streaming from services like Prime Music, Pandora, Spotify, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and things like that. Honestly, it's a nice little bedside table kind of thing that you can set there that has video that can show the weather and show clock times like that on it. Where it gets interesting, though, is not exactly a cheap product. Cheaper than the Echo Show, but it's $130 for each one of these Spot devices. So for my use case, I'm going to keep putting the Echo Dots out there because I don't need a smart alarm clock or a smart display somewhere, but I'm intrigued by it. I think it's interesting. I think it's a niche product, though.
So let me ask you this, Chris.
All right, go for it.
When you've been on Tech News Weekly before, we've often talked here about how you like home automation. So
it's true.
We've also talked a little bit about how things can be scary to have them always listening and whatnot. What exactly are your thoughts about having the camera in the bedroom?
So, I don't know. I'd have to look and see whether the mute capability they have turns off the camera. One thing to bear in mind, the only way the camera is triggered is when you set up a video call and things like that. Presumably, if you trust Amazon, the camera is not always on and watching you. That's if you trust Amazon. But remember, people are getting a lot more comfortable with stuff like this nowadays. You take your cell phone into your bedroom with you, don't you?
Yes, but the difference is that it's sitting face down on my bedstand.
Well, then you have a camera pointing straight up and you have microphones in there. So you're already starting to do things like that. And you already, if you have a Xbox One OG, you probably have a Kinect that's connected to it. So it's watching you when you're doing stuff. It's something we're already doing. We just don't really think about it. Personally, I don't have a use case for it. And there's kind of, for lack of a better term, an ickiness factor with almost putting a camera next to my bed like that. I wouldn't use it as a bedside thing. What I would love to use it for, if I got one, is literally set it on my desk underneath my monitors right here, so I could have the Echo Spot sitting right there. I could look and see times, things like that, but also have a smart home device sitting right on my desk during a show.
Here's the difference that I think is that with a phone sitting there, I put it on my nightstand. And if I go and I move it, the odds are it's still going to be facing up or down. Like, you know, there's not really a way that it's more likely going to end up on its side propped facing me. With a clock, how often have we reached over to look at the clock or get something on our nightstand and we bump the clock and we wake up the next morning and we go, okay, this is facing like completely wrong way. That's my concern, is I bump it and now it's facing my bed.
Yeah, I mean, it's really whatever you're comfortable with. If you trust the fact that Amazon's not going to be watching you all the time, remember, this isn't Amazon's first product with cameras in it. The Echo Look, or I think it was the Look, was the one that they're using for fashion and stuff. If you did it so you could check your outfits and take photos of it, I don't understand this use case. It's probably going to be in your bedroom also.
Yeah, I guess.
Suncast? I wouldn't do it personally.
Suncast, Mr. Bubby? What do you think?
It's interesting. I don't know that I would necessarily want this in my bedroom either. But I think this is also, you know, seeing Amazon, seeing how far they can push something like this. I'm not sure everybody's ready for something like this, but I think a lot of these companies, you know, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, always try to be the first company out with something. And sometimes they're ahead of the times, sometimes they're late to the game. And I think this is just one of those times Amazon is putting something out to see if it's something that people want, if it's something that's useful, and if they can create another market.
And it's not the first time they've done that. Remember, the Echo Dot Gen 1 was a very short run of things. The Echo Look, everyone expects. They're not going to sell a ton of those, but they're testing a market to see where things fit. Amazon's got so much money, they can do things like this, and it doesn't really matter.
By the way, in the chat, I should mention that Bandrew says, Amazon is making a play to take over the world. The way they will accomplish this is gathering naked pictures of all of us. They will force us in line or else they'll post the pictures to everyone.
They can have them.
I know what I'm getting all of you for Christmas.
Privacy cover?
Can you replace the webcam you put over my TV?
Clothes?
I mean, there's that too, but you know what? Let's just keep that. Let's just keep adding cameras, and then eventually we'll have our own little Gonna Geek Tech News Weekly crossover Big Brother season.
There you go.
I like it.
Chris, what else do you got on this extensive list?
So I'm going to power through some of these other ones pretty quickly because they're not as important as the devices we've already seen. One of the things that was announced recently is Google Home has the ability to allow you to place phone calls through your device. Well, Amazon has added that into all of their Echo devices. You can set it up in the app so you can enable phone calls. You can call someone through your device. It shows up with your connected cell phone number. They are also putting out another device called the Amazon Connect. It's a $35 adapter that basically lets you put phones in other rooms. It's a little speaker, wireless speaker phone that you plug in that hooks into the LAN to the network, and you can make calls to US, Canada, Mexico, for free. Ships sometime in the fourth quarter this year. I don't know a ton of it. I don't understand 100% how it works. And most of the articles I read were not very specific, mostly vague, but it's extending a capability they're building into the systems. And they're kind of saying, hey, for $35, you can buy this instead of buying another dot for $50. Personally, I'd pay the $50.
I was listening to the Bandrew Says podcast today in the gym, and Bandrew said that he didn't even know who to call to hook up a regular telephone anymore.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, we're still waiting for telephones to come to Canada.
They used to use tin cans and rope.
Well, we usually have carrier moose. That's what it is, carrier moose.
That's fair.
I didn't think there were enough people in Canada that you would need telephones.
You just kind of yell loud. What else is on here, Chris?
Next up, this one was weird. I kind of see where they're going for. It is the Echo Buttons, as they call them. They offer physical integration with other Echoes for family games. So basically what this is it's a new device. It's a small, roughly hockey puck shaped device that owners are able to pair up with their devices. At the press event, they showed off the buttons being used to play games like trivia. So you can have multiple people sitting there, you buzz in with your Echo button, and it automatically acknowledges you to play this trivia game. It's interesting. Again, not going to be used a ton. I think you might see some uses where you buy it for kids or for some party games. A two-pack is $20. It will be available sometime later this holiday season. People are probably going to be buying multiple two-packs, is my guess, because you're probably going to want four for a lot of these games, is what I'm thinking. So it's interesting. Again, it's Amazon floating something out there to see how many people use their devices for gaming, which there are some that do. Like, I love to play Jeopardy on mine every day.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty cool. I know what you mean. I questioned this at first, but yeah, it's definitely going in a good place, I think, and good intentions.
Yep. And real quick, software updates. They announced a ton of cool stuff coming in. I told you we'd go back to home automation. They now will allow you to do multiple events as a routine. For instance, saying Amazon Voice Services, good morning. You can have that set up to turn on lights, open a window shade, get the weather, and also tell a tea kettle to boil all in one motion, assuming you've set it all up on the back end. Very similar to the triggers and things you see with the Wink Smart Hub and other devices like that. You can just say one thing and it can trigger six different things to go off. Kind of a cool thing. One last neat thing with Amazon Voice Services, They are getting integrated into BMWs and select MINI vehicles beginning in 2018. The integration will use the far-field microphone units embedded inside a car, and Alexa content will be visually shown on the head unit in your car. See, I accidentally slipped up and said it right there. I hope you hit mute right before I did that.
You know why this is great? Because this is going into BMWs and MINIs and not a Nissan Juke. Like that Faraday cage box we were talking about eons ago.
That was dumb.
But is it going into a 2018 GMC Sierra?
I was just
thinking that.
Well, I'm glad that they're doing that update. That is a very important update for anybody who does home automation. That's what you want. You want to have the one command.
If you've already done home automation, you might have set up some of your own, though, using if triggers and stuff like that. And then one last thing, because we're not done talking about hardware. This is peripherally related to Amazon Voice Services. They did announce a new Fire TV. It did have 4K support. They've had that for a while. But the new version will support 4K HDR video at 60 frames per second, has Dolby Atmos integration, and the voice remote supports Amazon Voice Services for a price of $69.99, far cheaper than the new Apple TV 4K, which is starting at $179. You can pre-order it now for October 25th, but if you really want to do it, you can bundle it with an Echo Dot and pay $80 for the pair. So not a bad deal there if you were looking at investing in some of these things. So Amazon dropped the hardware mother load on us last week, and I was sitting there going, this is cool, but the only thing I want is that Echo Gen 2. Everything else is like, it's cool, but I don't need it.
Yeah, but you know, I think they're also trying to make it as much of an impulse buy as possible.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's funny that all of these things happen because I just got an email today from Wink, and they've put a bunch of stuff on sale. Now, I don't know if that means that they've got updates coming or they're going to go discontinued. Like, their Wink relays are now two for $99. They've put out a thermostat with a lower price of $99. They've put a sale on a deadbolt. So there's a whole bunch of stuff now. Is that because they're just trying to counter all of this home automation stuff that, you know, direct there that Amazon's getting into? Or is it the fact that they are going another direction? It'll be interesting to see. Now, let's just go ahead and move into our sponsored segment right now. It's our sponsored news article, I should say, because this one comes from the king of SP's used space shuttle emporium. Stargate Pioneer himself is going to tell you the next news.
That's King Stargate Pioneer to you. And my news story today, brought to you by SP's used space shuttle emporium, is a competitor, but he also makes stuff for me to sell. So, okay, it's Elon Musk. And this is a great time of year. I love this time of year because Elon Musk just gets bigger and better every year. He wants to fly this giant SpaceX spaceship to Mars, and he wants people aboard it, like hundreds, by 2024. So SpaceX is going to launch its first cargo mission to Mars in 2022 in preparation of this, and send people towards the red planet just 2 years after that to create a mini society. He's actually moving forward with colonizing Mars. I don't know if he's going to be able to afford all this, but okay, if you're going to do it, we're going to follow. So SpaceX founder and CEO, just had to point that out, Elon Musk, also the owner of Tesla and many other things, unveiled the highlights of SpaceX's current Mars colonization plan early on September 29th at the 68th International Astronautical Congress in Adelaide, Australia. And I know I just butchered that. I'm sorry, Australia. Musk's talk served to update the architecture the billionaire entrepreneur revealed at last year's IAC in Guadalajara, Mexico. And the only reason I knew how to say Guadalajara is I watched The Love Boat. So if The Love Boat went to Australia, I could pronounce your names correctly.
That's awesome.
That's great.
That presentation introduced a huge reusable rocket ship combo. And last year, he called it the Interplanetary Transport System, which is the ITS. But he revised that. It's no longer called the ITS, but its code name now is BFR, which is short for Big Fracking Rocket. And he didn't say fracking.
Nice.
That's fantastic.
And he's going to use that to help establish a million person city on Mars within the next 50 to 100 years. So His plan last year was to use the ITS system, now the BFR booster, with now 31 Raptor engines instead of 42. He downsized it a little bit, and that is to help sell it for other purposes of local launches to companies and sort of supplement the funding for it. Since then, in the meantime, for comparison, by the way, the Falcon 9, which is being used right now, has 9 Merlin engines. So 31 Raptor engines. Wow. So the concept is that the BFR would launch the spaceship into Earth orbit, then come back down to its pad for a pinpoint landing. And it would have flight after flight after flight in quick succession. The spaceship, meanwhile, will be fueled in orbit by a tanker, which would also be launched by a BFR. The BFR spaceships would linger in orbit until the time was right to depart for Mars. For those that don't understand, the orbital mechanics are such that every 26 months, Earth and Mars are lined up for that Earth-Mars-Holman transfer orbit. So he's going to stack spaceships in Earth orbit or in Mars orbit or wherever he's going to do until that Holman transfer is optimum. And then he's going to launch all of them, and they're going to travel in a little flotilla, kind of like Columbus did back in 1492. Imagine that. So each of these ships would have about 100 people on it. And these BFRs, by the way, would be about 348 feet tall, about 50 feet shorter than the ITS concept vehicles that were shown last year. They're going to be capable of lofting 150 tons. One, and I'm not going to do a comparison to 2018 GMC Sierras, but to 150 tons to low Earth orbit, making it more powerful than NASA's famous Saturn V moon rocket, which could launch 135 tons to LEO, which is low Earth orbit. It would stand 157 feet tall. It would feature 40 passenger cabins. So it's not like you're going to have your own cabin, like you're on the cruise ship upper deck, you get your own cabin. No, you're going to be crammed in there with 5 or 6 people each. The ships themselves that will go to Mars will have 6 Raptor engines in them. So not the BFR, not the booster, but the ships themselves. And the vehicles will land via supersonic retropropulsion, which would slow their descent through the Martian atmosphere using thrusters, just like the Falcon 9 boosters do here on Earth. So see, he's thinking ahead. It's a little concept demonstrator that he's got going on. So it will be reusable, just like an airliner. Of course, that was the concept behind the space shuttle as well, and that didn't work out as well. So we'll see if it really is reusable or not. And they are just now beginning serious development. So he shelved everything else. He's going to build out the Falcon 9 boosters, but this is where his concept is, and this is where he's, if you're a commercial customer, this is what you're going to get for a launch vehicle, the BFR. And if all goes according to plan, we will start Mars colonization in 2024. The first thing that they're going to set up is fuel creation. They're going to actually mine fuel from the Martian atmosphere, which is awesome. And then they're going to create an infrastructure to make the city bigger and bigger and bigger. And his concept can also be used for the moon, by the way. So he's got concepts for the Moon Station Alpha, I believe, as well as the Mars City as well. So he's got some great visions. He says 5 years is a long time. I believe him. 5 years is indeed a long time. But when you think about the colonization of the solar system, if this actually works out, this is happening really, really quick. I'm just astounded at this. He's a really believer in two planet lifeboat system. If something happens to Earth, then something might be sustainable on Mars. We'll see. And also of note, if you get a chance to take a look at his keynote address, he is really an introvert. He is not an extrovert at all. He really struggles speaking on the stage, but he has all these wonderful concepts to get out and all these wonderful plans that it's just the awesomeness of the magnitude of what he is trying to do that really drives him. I know he is really scared every time he gets on stage. He has said so. And I just want to say thank you very much, Elon Musk, for powering through it and giving us this, even if it's just visions at this point. You are inspiring hundreds of thousands of young people, perhaps millions. Thank you very much.
And it's a lot of tech on Tech News Weekly.
Yeah, it is. But that's the name of the show.
SP, Stargate Pioneer, as the resident secret director of NASA.
It was King Stargate Pioneer to you.
My liege. You call him my liege.
King Stargate Pioneer. I want to ask you this. What is the chance that this plan actually happens?
If he is transferring all of his company's future research and development into creating the BFR, that is a big keystone in this concept. And if he can afford to launch several ships into orbit and then populate them for this trip over in 10 years, oh my gosh, I can imagine, just imagine the amount of people internationally, not just here in North America, but internationally, the Chinese, the Russians, the Indians, the Japanese, just think about the people in the world that want to make this trip. Hey, this is going to happen as long as they can fund it.
You getting on the rocket?
No.
You going?
No.
Okay. I think this is going to be very exciting in the next, 20, 30 years to see all this stuff possibly happen.
Yeah.
See, I was hoping we'd have SP get on the rocket, and then in about 2029, he could do Tech News Weekly from Mars.
Who says
the
I'm
first
not
podcast
already there?
From Mars?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's true. First podcast from Mars goes to Tech News Weekly. Could you imagine, guys? One for the record books.
Here's the thing, though, that I gotta say is, okay, it's gonna be expensive to go to Mars, but right now we've been all super happy because we've been able to tweet from outer space. How much more expensive is it gonna be if we have to send double the characters?
Depends on how many tweets you send.
Suncast, tell me a little bit about that.
So this is probably some welcome news for a lot of people that are on Twitter. They just announced about 6 days ago that Twitter is now testing double the limit for the number of characters that you can tweet. Now, back when Twitter started, back in 2007-ish, the whole idea was 140 characters, which would fit nicely into an SMS or text message, because that was primarily the way that you sent a tweet, was by sending a text message. Hence, 140 characters. Now it's been about, 10 years later, and, 140 characters just doesn't really cut it these days. And about 9% of all tweets today are exactly 140 characters, which Twitter says is tough to do on accident, suggesting that users frequently have to edit their initial thoughts to get them under the limit. So this is why Twitter is now saying that they're testing 280 characters for their now limit on Twitter. And this is something that, they've been rumored about for a while now, possibly doing 10,000 character limit. But it seems like perhaps now it's just going to be 280 characters, which is double what they currently have now. I know, SP, you are one of these people that now uses Twitter solely because you're not on other networks. What do you think about this change in the number of characters you're limited to on Twitter?
There have been a lot of times where I've tried to tweet just a simple sentence and I've had to truncate galore and it almost doesn't make sense as it goes out. But I figure, hey, if somebody really wants to know, they'll ask me a question about it. And I've gotten my thought out there. As far as reading tweets, my timeline is so steep. And this is my own fault just because of the amount of people that I follow. It is so fast of all the people posting that I really do prefer the 140 character, although everybody's posting a link or a picture or something. They're just not having that conversation. And I fear that if you bump it up to 280, if you bump it up to 560 or whatever it's going to be next, then people are going to not treat it as the simple communication that it was really meant to be. However, Twitter's got to monetize somehow. So if this attracts more business to them and if they stay around longer, then maybe I don't know. I'm split on it. I would prefer them to keep it shorter, but I'm not the one making the decisions and I'm not the one trying to make it a profitable business. So I hope it works out for them.
I got to say, I think 280 is a good number. I was worried when I heard 10,000. I think that it needed to be more than 140. I genuinely do. I understand the reason behind it was back to the SMS, like you said, Suncast. But really, the 280 is still going to keep it short, but it's going to allow us to have a little bit more coherent sentences. Like, you know, it's going to be less putting an and or getting rid of a space. It's just enough padding. I think it's gonna make a difference.
I'll agree with that. Yeah, because I've often found myself, you know, having to edit tweets occasionally when I send them, and it's like, I just need maybe 40 more characters or something like that, and this will allow me to get out those tweets where I don't no longer have to, you know, edit them in a certain way, you know, like if I say anyone, it's got to be any in the one key instead of just spelling out one. So now this will definitely help with that.
Yeah, so that I'm glad to see that, and I am only at 140, as I mentioned. I don't know about everybody else, but I have not seen the increase myself.
So it's only select people that are getting the 280 right now, but this is whatever. It's a stupid move.
Don't you know, Chris, you can actually go into the JavaScript and send headers to make this something that you can use as well right now without being selected.
I guess part of why I like Twitter, though, was the condensed information. You scroll through, get a few things at a time. And at the same time, they've got bigger problems than the number of characters in your tweets. If you want to make a profitable business out of Twitter, maybe you need to look into, I don't know, taking care of the hate speech, properly handling when people report people for harassment, things like that. Depending on what you're doing on Twitter and who you are, it can be a very toxic environment. There's a lot of reasons why some people are leaving Twitter, and changing it to 280 characters does nothing to fix the problem they have with a toxic user base in some cases.
Yeah.
Fix that, Twitter. Fix that. That's the important thing if you want your community to grow. Make it so people don't feel like they're getting harassed for having an opinion that's opposite what a very vocal Twitter group might have. And I'm not going political. You guys can make your own assumptions on what some of this stuff is, but there's lots of toxic environments on Twitter. Clean it up. Find a way to report it properly. Do proper controls on things. Help control all the dumb spam accounts that do all sorts of porn retweets and spread porn or spread disinformation. That's Twitter's bigger problem. Changing to 280 characters, that's not going to do anything but satisfy a few people that are going, oh, I need more characters. And while I see the utility, they should be addressing other things.
But what happened to my column with all the porn bots?
Well, okay, there are some legit ones, I wager, but there are also a bunch of them that are like, my name is XYGirl91738. Follow me at my cam, and they just tweet you spam, and that's annoying.
Wait, she's not personally inviting me?
No, she's only personally inviting John.
Well, before we wrap up our news, I just got a couple of quick hits here. Number one, I'm just going to go ahead and mention that the iPhone X is awesome for Samsung. Don't know if you saw this, but that's pretty exciting that Samsung's going to clean up on the iPhone X, the 10. That's right. Apparently, Samsung is being estimated to earn about $110 for every iPhone X sold. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. And this is, of course, because Samsung makes the OLED screens for the iPhone 10. So Samsung is cleaning up on that. It's funny how Apple and Samsung can sue all they want and not get away from it. As well, Chris had another quick pick that was to do with the Pixel 2, right?
Yes, so Evan Blass, who's the notorious guy for getting leaked information, has some early shots of the Pixel 2, which we'll see officially on October 4th. So we're only 2 days away as we record this. But it looks like they have, in fact, narrowed the bezels, put a slight curve onto the phone. Woohoo! If you're really curious, just go and look. It's all over the place. If you're in the market for a new Android phone, it's something to consider.
And then I just have to say that it was a very, very, very busy space news week. You had Lockheed Martin, which announced another big SpaceX sort of thing. You had James Webb Space Telescope announcing their new launch date. You had Pluto, an announcement on Pluto with the origins of giant ice blades. And then Australia announced its National Space Agency. So a lot of important things happened this past week, and we're going to get to them in the future weeks of the GunnaGeek.com or Tech News Weekly, wherever I'm allowed to speak it.
Awesome. Well, before we do close things down, we have a segment coming up here that Stargate Pioneer has been so thoughtful to bring on to Tech News Weekly. He's going to give you a first impression of the iPhone 8. It is tech, so we thought we better do that here. It's not tech news, but it is news for him. However, first, I should remind you that this episode is indeed sponsored by SP's Used Space Shuttle Emporium. And I don't know if you know this, but Stargate Pioneer and his team over there, they accommodate all types of buyers, whether it's private space sector, public space sector, or even interstellar space sector. SP is going to help work with you to make sure you get the space shuttle that you want. So please head on over to snasa.space, use the promo code TNWSpace for 10% off your first space shuttle purchase. SP.
Yep.
Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your iPhone 8.
I will, as soon as you call me King SP.
King SP. Yep. Tell us a little bit about your iPhone 8.
Yeah, so I got an iPhone 8 Plus a launch day. It was mailed to me and it came in the mail. I didn't know I was going to get it. I thought I was going to get it a week later, and they never told me the shipping date had been moved up. There was no tracking information. It just showed up when another iPhone 8 in the house showed up. So we had a new iPhone 8 and a new iPhone 8 Plus. I just couldn't wait for the X, and I didn't know if I wanted to pay the extra for the X anyway. So I just went with the iPhone 8 Plus. I recently had an iPhone 6 Plus, so this was an upgrade for me. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the differences between the iPhone 6 Plus and the 8 Plus. So aside from a few differences, the fit form is roughly the same. So it's still got the 5.5-inch screen. It is a little heavier at 7.13 ounces versus 6.07 ounces with the 6 Plus. But honestly, I can't tell the difference because it's an ounce, guys. It no big deal. It's an ounce. Now, if I was packing a spaceship to Mars, that ounce would matter. But it doesn't matter to me right now. So whatever. It does have a faster chip. The processor is an A11 versus the A8. And that's the big difference that I noticed between the two. Because before, the 6 Plus was literally cranking along. I mentioned before in another podcast, I believe last week, that I was literally swearing when I was using it. Yes, I literally was swearing. I wanted to throw it across the room, but that wouldn't have been appropriate because it's very expensive. So I didn't. And I just waited for this to show up. This does have dual cameras versus the single camera. And the camera before, the resolution was 8 gigabytes. The dual cameras are 12 and 7 gigabytes, which is a staunch difference between the 8 gigabytes and the 1.2 forward facing camera as well. And the first night I had this, I happened to be at a local football game and I took a picture, and the picture was just phenomenal. I sent it to Steven. I was like, look, this is the picture. And if you're watching the YouTube video right now, you're going to see the picture. It was just an awesome scene. I had the difference of an actual field light, so a lot of light coming from the field. I had the actual sky very red. I had the vibrant greens and the football uniform colors, as well as the stands. And if you take a look at the YouTube video, you will see the half crescent moon above a completely colored student section as well. It's right above the goalposts there. I was just amazed that I was able to get this picture. And I don't know if I had been able to get it with my previous phone. So that's great. The storage, 256 gigabytes versus 128. And we talked about storage before, and cloud storage is becoming more and more of a thing. I don't use cloud storage, so this added 108 gigabytes was very, very needed. I was ending up deleting some apps on my old phone just to make it to the end. The 3D touch, as you're pushing down and as you push down harder, it actually is receptive in different ways. It's a little bit different for me to get used to. And honestly, I haven't completely gone over what it does in all the apps, but I do know that I'm having fun exploring, pushing down a little bit further. And it's always weird because you don't want to break the screen, right? But pushing down a little bit further and getting a little bit different response of different things that are available in the apps, such as copy paste or like likes or shares and that sort of thing. I do like the fact that this is water resistant. So for those that you don't know, I do long distance running from time to time when my knees allowed me to, and I do long distance biking. And between just being gone and out for an hour at a time, and the weather can change, and the sweat coming off my body, the water resistance is very, very needed in this versus the old one. No headphone jack. So how has that impacted me? Well, I'll be honest, it has impacted me once or twice when I've wanted to listen to something and I haven't had Bluetooth. However, because it has wireless charging and I can use the dongle, I can still use my podcasting gear that has that 3.5 millimeter jacks in and out. So I'm not completely without that capability. It's not ideal for me, but it is what it is, and I'll make do until I buy new stuff that can interface with the lightning jack. Wireless charging, that's very interesting. If you go over to the Gunna Geek Gear YouTube channel, you will see me actually demonstrate the fact that this can charge with a case on it. Now, there's no metal in this case. If there was metal in the case, it would probably hamper the magnetic field that is allowing the electricity to transfer between the two. And for those worried about radiation, those same magnetic fields are going on in every electric device anyway. So this is just using those magnetic fields at really close distances to be able to generate an electric field that charges your phone while it's touching. And it is by touch. So it's really close. I would say within a centimeter of it. But I did get three different chargers. I got this Anchor one, which was in the video that I showed on the Gunna Geek Gear channel. It's a PowerPoint QI Anchor charger that works pretty well. This is a little bit bigger. It's a Plyson. It's also a little bit lighter, and it seems flimsier to me, but it's a larger base to put the phone on. Unfortunately, Apple doesn't have their charger out right now. They said in their announcement that it was coming out in early 2018, I believe. And then for my desk, for my podcasting desk, I got this angled one. So it's an actual cell phone stand, so I can use the phone. It's a Turbot wireless charger pad, and I've been loving this over the past week. So the wireless charger feature is great because I can just lift the phone out and type into it and then put the phone back down and it resumes charging. Now, I don't know what that's going to do to the battery efficiency over time as per just charging completely and then taking it out of the charger, but this is a convenience factor to me. And I've said before that this phone really strikes me as an iPhone 6S because I really don't see that much difference between the two phones. It's the same fit form. It's got a lot of the same capabilities in the screen size. Yes, you take away the 3.5 millimeter, you get a better camera, you get a better, faster processor. But for the most part, it's the same phone for me. So yes, it's a lot of money. It really is a lot of money. And I wish they would have been able to cut off several hundreds of dollars to it. But honestly, if they're going to go into some new technology based on the 10 that's coming out next month, then in a year or two, I'm going to want to upgrade anyway. So, but I couldn't wait any longer. And I didn't want to spend all that much more money for a 10, which is really revolutionary. And we'd have to worry about, is it going to work for me or not? So as a podcaster, I want something that would just worked at this point in time in my life. And if I take the hit in the dollars, I take the hit in the dollars. The battery life, it's slightly better. Now, I did take the battery out of my 6 Plus and I put a new replacement in and I gave it to my wife and she has had no problems with it whatsoever. So maybe the battery, it's a 3-year-old battery and it's been through a lot of cycles. So maybe it just needed to be replaced. But the speed of the phone was just killing me and flipping back and forth between all those social media apps that I don't do. And it was really becoming a problem for me. Yeah. Yeah. There, I still had the Blab app. No, I deleted that off of that for security purposes. So yeah, overall I'm happy with the functionality of this. I mean, but there's no surprises. It's like, it works like I thought it was going to work and I'm glad I have it because I was frustrated with the one before and I'm looking forward to what they have in the future. do I have buyer's remorse? I don't think so, because even if I bought a Note 8 or the next LG phone or the next Pixel, it was going to be about the same amount of money. So I needed something. So I just went with what I knew, and I could communicate with the rest of my family through FaceTime, which I did talk to my sister last weekend, the mentally handicapped sister, and she said, I'm going to call you. Yeah. I'm like, oh yeah, you can call me. So yeah, that's still on the table. So there you go. Do you guys have any questions about the 8 Plus?
I do. I have one actually about that wireless charging, because I love that you did that video. If people want to check it out, it's www.geeks.link/iPhone 8 wireless charging. So geeks.link/iPhone 8 wireless charging. Take you right to the YouTube video. And one of the questions that I have is, when you put it down on the charging pad, does it kind of lock in? Like the Nexus 5 I had sort of had magnets in there, so you knew where it was in the right spot.
No, it just sits right on top of it. There's no lock in. So that's an interesting point, though. The Apple Watch, it locks in. There's no magnetic lock. This just sits on top of it. I think it's just too big to lock in. Obviously, there's a magnetic field, but I think the magnetic field isn't strong enough to lock it in there. And it just might be the fact that I'm too strong for the magnetic field, and I just don't notice it there. But I do notice it with the Apple Watch, because there are family members I've got two Apple Watches in the house, and they do magnetically seal down on that little charger.
That's supplemented with magnets in the charger too, if I recall correctly, for the Apple Watch. And I think when Apple puts out their official wireless charger, you might see that magnetic lock that moves things into the exact correct position, so the coils are lined up just perfectly. You can do that when you're going first party to first party, but all of the wireless chargers SP mentioned, since Apple doesn't have them, are all third party ones. So it's kind of luck of the draw and figuring out where that wireless connection is the strongest. So question for you though, SP, do you wireless charge overnight to get up to 100%, or do you plug in at night?
No, I wireless charge overnight. Matter of fact, I don't sleep as long as younger people do. And it does indeed charge over the course of 4 to 6 hours. So I'm able to get a full charge that way. There is always the risk, though, of being sleepy and putting it down and it not actually hitting the charge, like just being a little off and it won't charge. I think that happened to me one night, but I woke up in the middle of the night and I was able to see it and I put it back on and it charged 100%. I'm glad you brought that up, though, Chris, because this is not a quick charger. This is a long charge. So I just like the benefit of not having to take that plug in and out. And oh, by the way, the case that I have actually has a water cap to the lightning port to try to protect it, to aid in its water resistance. So it really is an extra pain plugging the lightning jack in and out.
There's actually a separate benefit too related to that. Chris and I have joked on here a couple of times about how Android had this wireless charging before. I'm not exaggerating. This was on the Nexus 4. I had a friend who went running and somehow he ended up frying his port. I guess it probably got wet and he plugged in his port. His phone was basically useless because it didn't work anymore with the port, until he went and he got a wireless charger and he got several more years out of it, because it was just an alternative way to charge. So one of the big things I love about wireless charging is it gives you two methods to charge your phone.
The only thing I caution with wireless charging, and this is predominantly from conversations in Reddit threads and message boards and stuff, and my information is dated around the Galaxy S6 timeframe, so might be a bit dated, is there's not trickle charging with wireless chargers. Yes, it goes slowly, but if you're familiar with trickle charging in a phone you plug in, that means it charges up to 100% and then just keeps enough power going through to keep you at 100%. My understanding, at least of the wireless charging implementation back then, is there's no such thing as that, meaning it charges you up to 100%, it turns off the wireless charger, your phone starts to drain down, and then say you hit about the 95% mark, then it charges you back up to 100%. So you're putting some extra cycles potentially on your battery because you're not trickle charging once you hit the top. So that's something to keep in mind with the convenience as you're looking forward. For me, when I was using wireless charging, it was predominantly I had a charger at work and I had a charger at my desk down here, and I would drop it on those during the day because I would never get to 100%, and then I would plug in overnight to get to 100. So
changing the batteries on one of these phones is not that big of a deal. I've done it for iPhone 4s, 4s's, 5s, 6s. I am confident I'm going to be able to do it for this 8. The problem I'm going to run into is a couple years down the road when I actually have to change the battery because I'm putting it through all these extra cycles, is I might reduce the water resistance capability of the phone by doing that.
Yeah, that's something to be aware of. Now, a lot of the take a tear down videos and stuff on the web will show you how to put it back together to maintain most of that. So when you get to that point, I'm sure you will do what the rest of us would do if we were tearing one down and view a few videos and some iFixit guides on how to just properly tear apart that phone.
Yeah. Suncast, what's your thoughts on this? I know you're in the market right now.
I am. Well, here's one of the things to me is the wireless charging sounds interesting, but I don't know what you're doing with like mounting it in the car, because I drive around a lot. I play Pokemon Go, so I'm always picking up my phone, and in doing so, I decided I wanted like a magnetic arm mount, so that's easy just for me to throw it on the magnetic mount and pick it up again when I need it, because I'm doing that so many times while I'm driving around. So would it be safe to assume that this sort of wireless charging would not work with a magnetic car mount?
Actually, I did look into that. I just haven't purchased one yet. There are wireless chargers available for 8s and 8 pluses in the car, and they're mostly mounted to the air vents, one of those.
Yeah.
But it has a cradle for the phone in there as well. It's not just a magnetic seal. It's a cradle for the phone. So okay. I haven't tried those, but that would be the only way that I would think that this would work, because you're going to jostle it around a lot driving around, even if you're the most careful mm-hmm. driver in the entire world. Like eggs, for instance, eggs are still in a carton for a reason, because you need the cushioning of the carton and the separation between the eggs so that they don't break on the way home from the right. grocery store. A cell phone is going to be about the same thing, especially when you're talking about that fragile connection that you need that is so close to that magnetic field to do the resonant induction charging. That's what it's called, by the way, resonant induction charging.
So 2 points on that you might want to be aware of on that. SP touched on it. Wireless charging is slow. So if you've got the GPS running a Pokemon Go while it's on that wireless charger, you're probably not going to have your battery go up. You'll be lucky if it stays steady and just slows down the drain, because those are fairly intensive and wireless charging doesn't provide a lot. And the other thing with a lot of those magnetic arms is, at least the ones I've looked at, it requires you to put a metal plate inside the case up against your phone or whatnot so it can hook to that. You have mm-hmm. to be careful if you're putting a plate in that case that you're not also covering the wireless Qi coil. Because if you're covering that with a plate, I don't imagine that your wireless charging, if it works, would be anywhere near as efficient as it could be. So that's one of the games you'll probably have to play to get things to sync up properly.
That's about what I assumed.
I gotta say, I don't understand why this is such a big deal, to be honest, to have this sort of secure method, because I had both a PlayStation 3 and a Nintendo Wii wireless charging apparatus. Both of those had them. Those are heavier, generally. I think those controllers were heavier than an iPhone, and they would just magnet snap on. I don't understand why this is a big problem.
But they weren't being jostled around in a car. That's the consideration.
I could probably
here.
Take that controller, throw it in my car, and I would get to my destination with the controller still there.
But you're talking about a phone with a flat back, and there's nothing really to hook it in anywhere to have any sort of friction resistance. It's just going to slide right off if it's not in a cradle.
And I wager they were making, remember, that charging pad is designed specifically for a PlayStation controller, designed specifically for a Wii controller. So they can strategically place magnets in that as well to help guide and lock that in. Your standard wireless Qi charger, you get some magnetic connection with the wireless charging, but for the most part, you're just placing it and there's not much resistance to moving the phone off. It's unless they're putting magnets in their design to say, hey, buy this wireless charger for your Galaxy S8, buy this one for your iPhone. It's going to make everything sync and hook in perfectly. You're not going to have that opportunity. That's why if you look at the Essential phone, they built their own dock that just uses the charging pins on the front of it. And you drop it in and it holds it secure. So technically it's wireless. It's just got a bunch of charging pins that are hitting in on it.
Mm. Well, thanks so much for sharing that, Stargate Pioneer. We've been waiting for a long time to have you on Tech News Weekly, and it's great that you could tell us about your first experience with the iPhone 8.
I'm always ready for a first experience on Tech News Weekly.
Awesome. So that's going to go ahead and take us towards the end of the show. Suncast, I should just take a moment here to let you talk about whatever you would like to talk about, since this is your show.
So I would like to talk about some more tech news, if you don't mind. No, I'm just kidding. you can follow everything we do. I don't know that we're going to make this something that we're going to bring back permanently, but definitely something that I do want to bring back. If I can find the right people to do it. And then I love doing this with you guys, but obviously you guys have Gunna Geek, but I would love to have this again on GFQ Network. So if you want to check out, we have a bunch of other shows on GFQ Network. If you go to gfqnetwork.com, we have hair loss shows on there. We have wrestling shows on there. We have all sorts of interesting shows on there. And you can follow everything I do on Twitter at Suncast. That's spelled with a K, not a C. And that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, I just want to say, honestly and genuinely, I do thank you for offering to do this with us today, because there was a lot of tech news happening and a lot of tech stuff right now. And it's fun to shake things up on the GunnaGeek.com show occasionally. And crossovers are really fun to do that. And, well, technically, Tech News Weekly might be in a lull. I'm going to call it a lull. I'm not going to call it dead or on hiatus. It's in a lull. Very honored that you would allow us to do this today.
This has been a lot of fun, and I'm wanting to do this more again.
Well, if I had more time, I would, but it's like I've said it offline a couple of times that if I ever do more podcasts, I'm going to have to be super flexible and probably just do them on my own where I can fit them in. I got a very busy family now. I've got two little itty bitties. Otherwise, I would love to do it, because we do talk tech, obviously, on the GunnaGeek.com show, but we also talk a bunch of other geekery, and tech is... I would say that tech is just a little bit more than me than some of the other geekery. Like, you know, I grew up, we would go camping and I would read tech magazines. You remember when those were a thing? You actually read those. And so it's just a little bit more nostalgic for me. So I wish I could, but unfortunately I can't.
Yeah.
Chris, anything that you would like to plug or promote?
Well, first of all, thanks to Suncast for letting me come back for a third time to Tech News Weekly. It's been fun as per usual. And just a friendly reminder to everyone who's watching the show tonight, don't forget to swing on over to GunnaGeekNetwork.com and check out some of the other shows that we've got on the Gunna Geek Network. We've got upwards of 20 shows on there that cover a variety of different topics, so I'm sure we'll have something that will interest you.
Awesome. SP?
It's just great to be a part of this network and to be a part of this show, because we get to do cool things like this. We get to do cool things like Gunna Geek. So I just want to thank Steven very much for enabling this, because without your talents, without your ability to be as flexible as you were, because this wasn't planned, people. This was a last minute ad, and we are very fortunate to be able to throw this together.
This was like 11:30 this morning. We're like, hey, let's do this.
Which is good, because I planned on doing Geek Wars, but I didn't have the questions together, so you saved my bacon. So thank you very much.
No, seriously, thank you. I want to echo what SB is saying, and definitely thank you for allowing us to do this, because this has been amazing to do this again, and you know.
Awesome. Well, no problem at all. And so, before we go, I will just let you all know that next week, the GunnaGeek.com show will be away. We're taking a week off. It's Canadian Thanksgiving, all that stuff. I think there's a holiday down there in the States, but yeah, we're just not going to be here next week. But we'll be back the week after, which is the week of the 15th. So do come back then. But for episode number 210 of the official GunnaGeek.com show / episode whatever of Tech News Weekly, I'm Stephen John Drew saying, Nate, thank you very much. You're the man. You know why, bud.
And I'm King SP saying, come on down to SP's U Space Emporium. We'll set you up with a deal.
And I'm Chris, and I'm going to podcast from Mars in 10 years.
All right, we're going to do the first podcast from Mars.
Awesome. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the GunnaGeek.com show. If you enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star review in iTunes or a thumbs up on YouTube. We encourage you to send your feedback by email to show@GunnaGeek.com. You can find our entire archive at GunnaGeek.com/show. And while you're there, why not check out all of the other geeky content on the Gunna Geek Network? Want to chime into our live chat? Join us Mondays at 8:45 p.m. Eastern at www.geeks.live. The music heard on this show is by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com. This show was produced and edited by Stephen John Drew of Gunna Geek Productions. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you again next week.